Welcome back to the Harry Potter Cast, a podcast in which we discuss all things Harry Potter. My name is Dejure, leisure editor for The Voice, and I'm here with my co-host, Sienna, managing editor. Sienna, how are you today?
I'm good. It's the day after production, so I'm just hanging in there, but I'm happy because this is like the highlight of my day. Yay. Talking about Harry Potter.
Yes. Yeah, late nights, but Harry Potter saves the day because he is the hero. For this episode, we are once again joined by my roommate, Gabby. Gabby,
hello.
How are you today?
I'm good. I'm trying to finish the week.
As we all are. As we all are.
I think that pretty much describes my mood.
So in this episode, we are going to do a deep dive into the first ever Harry Potter movie, taking it way back to 2001, Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone. Or Philosopher's Stone if you are in literally any other country except the United States. Much like the last episode, we're going to start with how we were introduced to the film series this time instead of the book series. So Sienna, what was your introduction to the films? Or specifically the first one?
I don't know if there was ever, like, I don't remember a time where I saw, oh wow, the first one's coming out, or I mean, I was three when it came out, so obviously it wasn't in my... I watched it, like, a few years after it had come out when I was old enough to be... So I think I probably watched it when I was, like, six or seven, because that's around when I started reading the books. And I remember watching it with my family. But I don't, it wasn't some dramatic moment. It was just, like, oh, she likes these books, let's watch the movie.
Yeah. Gabster?
I think my first memory... I have a very vague, vague memory of watching, I think the second movie in preschool.
Aww.
So what was that, like 2002 or
2003? Yeah.
And I'm watching Aunt March float away. So that is like my 4-year-old memory. But I think when I really started like watching Harry Potter for fun, it would probably be like age 10 maybe. My dad brought home, probably like Walmart or something, the Goblet of Fire, and so we had that one at home on DVD, so we would rewatch it all the time. Then ABC Family started running all the movies nonstop, basically. So that was that.
We love those ABC Family marathons. R.I.P. to those ABC Family.
Now
it's Freeform, and they don't even have Harry Potter anymore.
That's just
like, isn't that crazy?
Not what anyone wants.
It's not what anyone wants. That's what they were good for.
Sci-fi did have a marathon.
Sci-fi also did that. I think it's on USA Today now, isn't it? The Harry Potter marathons? Or is it sci-fi
strange.
Now? No, that's what it is. It's on sci-fi now because Freeform no longer has it. Sci-fi acquired the rights to like play the marathons.
I think last semester, at least every other time that I would turn on the TV, there was a Harry Potter movie playing.
Yes, literally. And I would try to watch it as much as I could. So my introduction to Harry Potter starts with ABC Family. I used to just flip the channel and see this really blonde kid on a broomstick, which I now know is Chamber of Secrets. And I would just be like, this is stupid. Flash forward to around 7th grade. I was scrolling through Tumblr and I kept seeing Harry Potter GIFs. And I was like, what is this Harry Potter? And I think there was like a new one that was coming out, which I now know is Deathly Hallows Part 1. So all of Tumblr was talking about Harry Potter and putting like the GIFs out and all of this stuff. And I was like, you know what? I want to be in the loop too. And so I went online. I found the first movie. I watched it. And the rest is history. So now that, you know, all of our backstories of Harry Potter, I think the best way to start talking about these films is, and we're going to get back to this question in the very last film that we do, but do you guys think that they should have waited until all of the books were out? Like, do you think...
to start making the movies?
Yeah. Like, do you think they should have just waited till 2007 when that last one came out and then went from there?
So I've been thinking about this for a while now, and I think my answer varies depending on like the reasoning or the motive behind or the different motives behind waiting or not waiting. And I think I appreciate them not waiting because my idea of what is Harry Potter was very much solidified by watching the movies first,
mm-hmm.
right? And my excitement for the last movies came from, like, reading the books initially in grade school and then watching the movies. So I think it was fine. And I think also that if you're gonna... The way, I don't know, I think when J.K. Rowling was writing the books and the movies were being produced, it wasn't necessarily with the intention of, I'm going to write these books because they're going to be produced into movies, right?
Yeah.
Or I'm going to write these books because, or write them all at once and then later have all the movies produced because I want people to be able to imagine on their own. I think they just kind of like, the way it turned out was the way it happened to have worked. So
mm-hmm.
I think it was cool. The way it worked, because I think I could like relate it back to Game of Thrones and how I don't think some of the books were coming out, but like
it's still not finished.
The book isn't
the series
finished.
Is about to end, and those books still aren't done.
Yeah, yeah. And that just kind of makes me confused. I don't really understand the logic of how that works. But I
me either.
I think right now I'm gonna say I appreciate the books being written and the movies being produced as the books came out.
Yeah. Sienna? Mm-hmm.
I think I agree with that. Because I think, like, doing that sort of kept the engagement going.
Mm-hmm.
And you're right. I'm sure there was a time in which I had not seen the first movie and I was just sort of visualizing all the characters for myself. But now, in my head, regardless of how they're described in the book, my visual attachment to the characters and how I picture them and how I think of them speaking, particularly Hagrid and Dumbledore, or, you know, others who have distinctive voices, is so mm-hmm. tied into the actor's portrayals in the movie that I don't know what I would think that these characters look like if I had only read the books and not seen the movies.
Yeah.
I don't know if that makes any sense, but...
No, yeah.
Yeah, I think it was a good idea to have them going simultaneously.
Yeah, I think I agree. I mean, on the one hand, I can see why someone would argue that they should have waited, because there are definitely some changes, particularly like if you get later into it, that they made that, like, I feel if they would have like precisely known exactly how the last book ended, it would have been differently. Of course, they had J.K. Rowling on hand to tell them, but there was still certain changes. I don't know as much in Sorcerer's Stone, so I won't get into it now. I'll get into it when we get to the specific movie. But on the other hand, I think I agree in that I don't know if I could imagine the series any other way, right? Like, this is the series that we got, and for something that spanned 10 years, for something that we watched these kids literally grow up on the screen, like, this was actually a really, like, monumental feat to do, because it's like, this is a whole series of 8 movies of 7 books, and I feel like, even with some of the changes that they made that may have made me a little frustrated, or certain things like that, like, I've never seen a book-to-movie adaptation be this well, and this well received by the fans as well. Like, majority of Harry Potter fans, even if they're mad at some of the movies, they love the movies, like, for what they are, you know? And so I can't imagine it any other way, and so my answer is, it's fine. I'm glad they did it. Yeah.
Do you know what these movies remind me of? Like, an extended cast growing up as we watch the movies?
Oh, God.
Your least favorite movie?
My least... Are you talking about Boyhood?
I am. I
just... Oh my God, Boyhood!
Just wanted to bring that up to watch you get angry.
It took 12 years to make! I hate Boyhood. This has nothing to do with Boyhood, but
no.
I just want to point out that movie was so overrated, and it only got all of the clout that it did because it took 12 years to make. Okay, Harry Potter took 10, so what? Anyways.
I really just wanted to say that to...
Thank you for bringing up my anger, Sienna. Let's go to more happy stuff. Yes. Unless there was one last point you wanted to make,
no,
Gabster.
I'm good. Let's continue.
Okay, so let's go to more happy stuff. Happy stuff as in our favorite scene. So this is the first Harry Potter movie. Like, this is how we're getting introduced to the Wizarding World, like, on a visual standpoint. Like, I know I think, Sienna, did you read the books beforehand, right? Mm-hmm. So, like, but for me and Gabby, this was our introduction, was, like,
or I think I kind of, like, some of the books were still coming out, and yeah. I had seen some of the movies, yeah.
So, like, this is a lot of people's introductions to, like, the Harry Potter world. So, like, what is a scene that just completely worked, like, for you? Like, just, they, when you look back on the Harry Potter series and the first book and adaptation-wise, or even if it's just, like, on a filmmaking standpoint-wise, like, what scene just they nailed? Gabster, do you have a scene?
Oh, I have several scenes that I really enjoyed. Not necessarily because they nailed them, though, so maybe I'm going to pass on this one.
You don't have any scene, or at least, like, one that you can mention that you really love. Mm. There is no passing.
I can't pick one scene that I really loved, so I'm gonna tell you all the scenes that I really enjoyed.
Go for it, Gabby.
So, in chronological order, I really enjoyed Harry getting off the train once he got to Hogwarts and meeting up with Hagrid. Mm. I think it was so cool to see him be in this very foreign place, or foreign to Harry, but, like, be welcomed with open arms.
Gabby, that's actually really cute, because that's, like, I feel like that's such a, like, a small thing. Like, I don't think most people would mention that, because it's just, like, Harry seeing Hagrid and be like, Hagrid, whatever, but that's really cute. Aw.
Thanks. Next would be the scene with the troll. I really enjoyed that. I enjoyed the dynamic between Harry and Hermione and mm-hmm. Ron, and the way in which Hermione was basically, like, paralyzed with fear, and usually she's this person who is 10 steps ahead of everything, and she literally did not know what to do. Like, the boys had to yell at her to tell her to move. So I thought that was really cool. It was cool to see Harry jump on the troll's back. I think that's one of the first scenes you see Harry interacting with, like, a magical creature that he has no idea, like, how to interact with. So I really enjoyed that.
I love how he just goes all in. Like, yeah, he's just like, whatever.
And also seeing Ron be able to cast a spell
with Hermione's help, yeah, from the sidelines.
Yeah, I thought that was super cute too. It's just their friendship. the next one would be when Harry gets the cloak on Christmas Day, I think it is.
What a scene.
And then also seeing him get the presents from Mrs. Weasley. And seeing Ron with his sweater on. It was kind of sad because they're alone on Christmas and they're 11. But I really liked their room. Like, just imagining the idea of these kids, like, living on their own, like, in a dorm style thing, is wild to me. So I like them. I like being able to see them as, like, people on their own.
And just, sorry, but going off the point about being alone, I feel like they were alone on that Christmas, but, like, that's the first Christmas that Harry probably felt, mm-hmm. like, not alone at all.
Yeah.
And I think that's beautiful.
Yeah.
We love
Harry. I also really liked the scene where the trio, where Harry, Ron, and Hermione go to Hagrid's hut, and this is right before they get snitched on by Malfoy. Just because I love seeing Hagrid's hut, I think the proportionality of how Hagrid looks so small in it, but mm-hmm. it's just, and also just, like, all the knickknacks on the inside. And then also there's a specific moment where Hermione's sitting in Hagrid's chair, and mm-hmm. she just looks so small.
She just looks so tiny.
But she's going on and on about something that she had, like, learned or, like, realized or something. So I thought that was really interesting. And then I didn't like every single thing about the repercussions of going to Hagrid's hut and getting caught, and then having to go to the Forbidden Forest as their punishment, obviously because there's some discrepancies between what happened in the book and what happened in the movie, but I like just the visuals of the Forbidden Forest. And then aside from that, I also really like seeing the dining hall, regardless of which part it is in the movie. I love the visuals of the dining hall, and every time I imagine myself going to school, I always wanted a dining hall like the one in Hogwarts, and I always wanted the long tables and the platters of food.
And Georgetown does not deliver. In the slightest.
Wow.
Gabby, that was a beautiful list. Thanks. That was a beautiful list. Thanks. I'm gonna stick to one. because I have my favorite scene, and I think for me it's gonna have to be Harry entering Diagon Alley.
Oh my god, you took mine. I was gonna stick with one, and that was the one that I had in my head. Wow. Okay. Well, I'm just gonna jump on that then, like, and let you talk, and that's fine.
No, wait. Why?
No, you explain. You go first.
Well, I think
if I have an example,
for me, it's our first real introduction into the Wizarding World, and I think they nailed it. Like, we want to talk about scenes that they nailed and like visuals that they nailed. Diagon Alley is like it. Like, it just, the music swells, and I'll get into John Williams' score in a minute. Oh yes, I will. But the music swells, and you just see like the kids looking at the broomstick. It's the Nimbus 2000, the fastest model yet, and it's just so like magic. And I just want to be there, and I just want to be a wizard, and like, I don't know, just, it fits so well with, like, the tone of the movie and the wondrous excitement of, like, discovering this world that, like, we had no idea existed, and just leaving the boring, mundane world that we are all forced to live in and entering a beautiful Wizarding World. And, I mean, we all know that Wizarding World gets darker and darker as the series progresses, but, like, just being able to see it in this fantastical light from a kid's point of view is the best, and they nailed it. And
yeah, you know how like in a club when they have you do an icebreaker and you have the answer in your head and you're like, yeah, no one else takes, I hope not. No, but it's fine. Yeah, I agree with everything that you said. I think it's cool because we get to discover everything as he is discovering it, and like obviously some of it is explained in the movie, but some of it you just see and you just take it in. It's the atmosphere of everything, like what you said with the boys, and then later he's like, Hagrid, what's Quidditch? Like, just stuff like that, where it's so well done, as like we are getting this picture as he is getting this picture. I don't know, and I like the scene where he picks out his wand.
Oh, the scene, I think Ollivander is
creepy as fuck, and it's like, so whatever creepy. But it's a great scene when he finally finds it.
Do you think Ollivander is creepy?
Like, well, I don't know if I would describe it as creepy, but it definitely feels, and I think sort of purposefully so, but to me that scene always like felt as foreboding because of the fact that his wand is like the twin wand and of Voldemort.
And at that time, Ollivander knows that, and like, right, he tells Harry kind of, but not, he doesn't actually tell him, and so Harry doesn't know, but Ollivander's like, oh, what did I just start, like, what's going on? You know what I mean? Like, and just it's knowing funny that this, like, wand should choose you of all people. Right,
and just knowing how that, like, comes back into play in Goblet of Fire with the duel, and then later with Deathly Hallows and the battle in the air. I know there's a specific name of that battle, and I can't remember it. But just, like, seeing how it's our first, like, real reference to he who must not be named, to this conflict, to this
ultimate power struggle,
right, this like weird bond that like they have. And that scene, I feel like when I first watch it, and maybe not like realizing the rest of the scene maybe put me a little off, because I was like, ooh, who's this? But then like watching it now, like knowing where the series goes, it always reads as foreboding to me. And I'm so glad that they like managed to keep that in, because J.K. Rowling is a master at like foreshadowing without anyone realizing that she's foreshadowing. And sometimes I feel like the movies forget to add in the little details that J.K. Rowling does. So like them adding that, perfect. Diagon Alley all around. Wonderful.
I think I want to add a side note. Even though Diagon Alley didn't make it to my top 5 or 6, I really enjoyed the scene at Gringotts. I love Gringotts. I love seeing, I think just the, what are they called?
The goblins
and their faces, and also the costume techniques involved in all of that. But also just the idea of Gringotts is really cool, especially once Harry gets to see his or the money his parents left him. And the scene at Ollivander's was cool. And I liked seeing, I really enjoyed seeing Harry hold his wand for the first time.
Oh, yeah. And then the light.
The way the light shined. The
breeze. And, oh!
Yeah.
Goosebumps every time, honestly. Mm. Like, every time.
Oh, and the first, when the wall first disappears, the way people are, like, moving every which way, and the way the alley is very crowded. Mm-hmm. I thought that was really cool. And I think can I talk about things I didn't like?
Yeah, actually, yeah, that's a perfect segue into things we do not like.
I guess things I do not like is that we really only see, like, this one very small part of Diagon Alley, mm-hmm. right? When Harry was going into all the different shops in the book, I wish I would have been able to see more of the shops.
Yeah.
I wish I'd have...
I would have liked to see him get fitted with the robe.
Yeah.
I actually would have really liked to see...
Yeah, because that's a pivotal scene with Malfoy, too.
Like, that's the introduction, like, yeah.
I think just more... I think I just wanted to see more of the Wizarding World that mm-hmm. Harry was able to experience.
Yeah.
As J.K. Rowling wrote it.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, I definitely agree. Mm. And I think, just going off of that, my least favorite moment in this movie is directly before Diagon Alley, and it's when Harry enters... Leaky Cauldron.
Leaky Cauldron, wow. When,
look at that. When Harry enters the Leaky Cauldron and he's meeting all the wizards, like, all of that is fine. But when he meets Quirrell and he goes to shake Quirrell's hand and Quirrell goes, ooh, and kind of, like backs up. I get that maybe they were trying to do that to, like, sort of, like, give a little hint at the young audience that, like, Quirrell might be the bad guy, this. But it makes literally no sense that Quirrell would, like, not shake his hand or would have any idea about him.
Well, he probably recognized him as Harry because, like, everyone in the quadrant is...
He knows that he's Harry, of course, but it makes no sense that Quirrell would understand that by touching Harry, he would, like, disintegrate.
That is true. I understand that, but I feel like, from a different perspective, it might also have been that, like, he was scared of the power that Harry held over... Like, Voldemort.
Maybe also, Voldemort was talking to him.
Also, from a timeline standpoint, Quirrell, at that moment, he isn't even supposed to have his turban.
When is he supposed to have that?
When they get to Hogwarts.
No, but I thought it was, like, he was in the forest, remember? Like, he said, oh, I just got back from this, like, expedition or whatever in Albania.
Yeah, but I don't think he was, like, fully there yet.
Well, see, that's the flaw also with the time jump. Because remember when he goes to Diagon Alley, it's his birthday, and then suddenly he's at school a month later. So maybe somewhere, like...
Mm-hmm. I feel like either way, that scene always annoyed me because of that reason. I feel like they either should have just not had Harry, go to shake his hand and just been, like, a high. Or Quirrell should have just, like, not looked so, like, timid at that moment. It never made sense to me. It never read well to me. I just don't understand why Quirrell would even know about that. Because even when Quirrell, at the end, goes to stop him, and Voldemort's like, stop him, Voldemort didn't say, don't touch him, though.
That is true.
If Voldemort did know that, then he would have told him, hey, don't touch him, though. Like, there's no... Voldemort didn't know that if Voldemort was on Quirrell at that moment, which... For some reason, I'm remembering that he wasn't, but maybe he was. And if I just, that scene has always bugged me.
Voldemort was on Quirrell.
Was on Quirrell. That scene has always bugged me. And this quite possibly could just be me being the most nitpicky person in the world. But the climax of this movie is so important, and that scene just minimizes that importance just a little bit for me. Because how am I supposed to believe? Why does Quirrell look so shocked? If you already know this, why do you look so shocked, stupid? Like, it's been established that you already knew that you can't touch Harry. So what other reason?
Oh, that's interesting.
What's up?
In the book, Professor Quirrell grasps Harry's hand.
What?
See? I'm not going crazy.
Whoa.
He wasn't fully, there yet. Like, you know?
He must not have been... Voldemort-ified.
He was not Voldemort-ified yet in the book.
I take back my comment. Mm-hmm. But I feel like in... If you... So, I think this is one of the things that makes comparing the book and the movie interesting. In the way that maybe the plot of the movie and the plot of the book are supposed to be considered separately.
Yeah, I agree.
So, but, so that's what I'm thinking. And maybe at that point, Quirrell was already in the process.
Yeah.
Like cahoots with Voldemort.
And I would totally buy that if it still didn't make sense that at the end, Quirrell was surprised by the fact that Harry burns. Like, I don't mind that the timeline is different and then at that point, Quirrell was already with Voldemort. I could really care less about that timeline. But at the end of the movie, when Quirrell touches Harry, he's like, oh no, what's going on? And I'm just like, didn't you know about this already? Why are you confused?
Yeah, so then I don't retract my statement. And I don't know, I feel like every, in a film or in a movie, every single part of a movie, every single like detail of everything has a reason. And for me, I'd like to believe that reason is that Quirrell has like some perception of Harry, that he's like, Harry's just like the chosen, not obviously not the chosen one yet, but there's just something about Harry that makes Quirrell like step back. I don't know.
Yeah, no, I get that, and that's a valid way to look at it. I choose to look at it as it was just dumb and they should have not put that in the movie or changed the way they directed that scene, because it doesn't make any sense to me. And every time I watch it, I'm just like, why are you cowering like that? Just shake the boy's hand. You shouldn't know about this yet. So, yeah. That scene gets on my nerves.
It's
literally the smallest thing, too. And it bugs me literally every time I watch Harry Potter. I don't know.
I think...
Silliest thing.
The movie also portrays Professor Quirrell as very, like, flinchy.
Mm-hmm.
And not at ease at all.
Yeah.
So that kind of makes sense. As a person who has more experience watching the movies first and then reading the books, It kind of... And I think if you consider that the movies were maybe tailored to people who hadn't watched the book first, or hadn't read the book first, that there really, like, would not be...
No, yeah.
Yeah.
I think I definitely see why they were doing it. It was to, like, emphasize Quirrell's timidness and, like, his flinchiness or whatever. I just wish that didn't come at the sake of making it not make sense of why he would still touch Harry at the end, or why he would be shocked by what has happened to him. It's just the silliest thing. I don't get it. Sienna?
Oh, my least favorite scene. I don't know if it's, like, least favorite, or if it's just, I don't know, the scene, like, hit me emotionally, because I feel like in the beginning, we do get some sort of, like, obviously we get character building for Harry, but in terms of his family situation and his life, and how his aunt is just sort of banging on the door, and, you know, come make our breakfast, and, you know, you're not really treated like you exist, kind of thing, but the scene I wanted to point out was the one right before Hagrid enters, and it's his birthday, and he's just, like, drawing in the dust on the floor, making himself a birthday cake, and he just blows out the candles. He's like, happy birthday, Harry. And I'm like, this man, this child is just so alone and, like, so sad. It really spoke to, I'm gonna be all, you know, I'll collect myself. It spoke to his loneliness and his upbringing, and that nobody gave a crap about his birthday. They're all just sleeping, and, like, even if you could say, oh, you know, maybe they'll do something the next day, they're not doing anything the next day. Like, they're not. They gave him dirty socks or whatever. The funniest parts of the later books, or some of them, is that they say, oh, like, the Uncle gift. Dirt, like, he just mailed me his sock, or, like, a coat hanger, or just ridiculous stuff. So you know that they're not actually going to do anything. And that, I think, sadness of that scene, patheticness of that scene, emphasizes Hagrid made him a birthday cake. Like, what he was drawing in the dust is now real. It's just the contrast there, or, like, it just emphasizes the happier moments, because that moment is so low.
So low.
I think one of my favorite visual parts of that scene, I think one of the coolest parts of the movie, or the way that the movie was produced or directed or whatever, was in my notes, I just have blowing out candles, !! And I think what that means is that I thought it was really cool that when Dudley's watch clicked 12, the wind blew and it blew like the candles out, which I thought was super cool, because he like made a wish, you know, the candles were blown out.
I can't imagine how freaking cold Harry was on that damn dusty floor. Oh, poor baby. So glad Hagrid came. And then before we get into some more like film making stuff as a whole, just want to keep up this whole MVP, LVP thing we got going on. So do you guys have a different MVP for the movie than you did for the book, or is it just same old, same old?
No, mine's different. Mm-hmm. So my MVP for the movie would probably be Hermione. I really appreciate the way Hermione was portrayed as someone who also had not been immersed in the wizarding world, and I think specifically was just, I think maybe more like her character and the way her character was portrayed, mm-hmm. more than anything else. I think one of the specific scenes I'm referring to is when they're on the Hogwarts Express, and she's helping Neville look for his toad or something like that, and in contrast to what we read in the book or what we see later in the movie in regards to Malfoy responding to Weasley's background and Ron's background and Ron's identity, is that she doesn't make assumptions about people, and rather she like bases off observation or the information that she's able to gain. So she asks Ron, like, who are you? Not exactly like, she doesn't look him up and down and say, well, your robes are ugly and torn, so I'm gonna make this assumption about you. So I really appreciate Hermione's character. Not like her character, but like her characteristic about it. But also her character.
Yeah. It's gonna have to be Harry again. For largely the same reasons as the book. I love me some Harry Potter, man. He's still my favorite character. And yeah, it's the same thing.
Yeah, I think mine are the same. I said Hagrid as my MVP and Snape as my LVP. I just think Snape's storyline was so pared down in this, mm-hmm. that, like, it really just doesn't make any sense how he's sort of... You know you're supposed to view him as an evil figure, but what's actually shown to you in the movie makes it seem more like Harry is just being paranoid, whereas in the book, they're very clear of all these clues that lead Snape to being the suspect in this. And I don't know, I think I love Alan Rickman. I think he only gets better as the movies go on. But in this movie, the storyline did not do him justice. The script did not do him justice. And I think Hagrid really just drives the plot along, whether he intends to or not. Like, he's the one who introduces Harry to the wizarding world. He's the one who brings in the idea of Gringotts and storing something secret in a vault, and he, you know, drunkenly buys a dragon egg, and he mistakenly reveals how to get past Fluffy, and he just really, in his kind of bumbling, lovable way, pushes the plot along in a way where if he wasn't in it, nothing would have been able to happen.
You're 100% right on that. And just going off, I think my LVP of the movie is different than the book. It will be Quirrell.
Who is of your...
Malfoy was the book. But this is going to have to be Quirrell. I don't like him. I don't like him. That's it.
Makes sense.
He annoys me more in the movie, I think, than he does in the book. I feel like I've expressed this pretty openly. Because considering my least favorite scene largely revolves around Quirrell. But, like... I don't know, not saying that, like, I think he's, like, they did him wrong in the movie, whatever, but just something about, I don't know if it's, like, the way the actor was instructed to, like, act as Quirrell or what, but something about Quirrell just makes me a little more annoyed with him than I am with Malfoy. And with Malfoy, I am always annoyed.
I think I only said my MVP, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think my LVP was...
It was Dumbledore last time.
Yes, last time it was Dumbledore. I think this time, I'm going to say Ron. And we've had this whole discussion about...
We have had this discussion.
About Ron. As he's portrayed in the movies versus the way he's portrayed in the book. And I guess from two different perspectives in relation to the book, it wasn't all that enjoyable. But even previous to reading the books, I never really felt like Ron added that much in regards to Harry and Hermione's friendship. I just felt like there could have been more. And I also really liked Quirrell.
Oh.
I liked the way he was portrayed in the movie.
I mean, and I think... I feel like this is more relevant for later movies, but I feel like there is something to be said about Ron and his portrayals in the movies, because I do have some issues with it. I don't know if I have as much issues with it from the first movie as it mainly starts in Chamber of Secrets, actually, where, like, I feel like the minimizing of Ron's character for the, like, glorification of Hermione's character is really evident in the movie, and I do have some issues with that I will talk about in a later podcast. But I do think your feeling about Ron, even though I don't share it, I think is actually valid, because I do think the movie did some things with Ron's character, more so later in the series for me. But
yeah, I think in the first one he's just like lovable and cute and like just a fun dude. He just, you know, he rides the chess piece and saves the day.
I love me some immature little boy Ron in the first movie.
Them
and
just
book.
Eating their candy.
Just eating their candy. Him eating the fried chicken. And then seeing Neil, he had this thing going, ah! I love me some Ron. And I think this is like a good segue to go into like the film as a whole and how this film was constructed. And I feel like we could start that with the cast. So like, going off first with the main trio, Daniel Radcliffe, Emma Watson, and Rupert Grint. Love them? Meh? Hate them? What do you think? I know me personally, their child acting, it's not the best. They find their footing. They do. But it's not the best. In fact, out of all of the kids, I think that Tom Felton is the best as Malfoy.
Mm.
But that being said, like, it's not egregiously bad, and like I think that they hit it on the nail with Daniel Radcliffe, although the not having the mother's eyes thing, you know, it still kind of made me want to fight, but that's okay. It's okay. I can get over it. I can pretend that he has the green eyes. I can pretend. But I do think that they hit it on the nail with Daniel Radcliffe. Emma Watson. I mean, is she Hermione? She might as well be Hermione. And especially in this one when they were still going for the bushy hair thing.
Mm.
Solid. And then Rupert Grint, I feel like he was born to play Ron. Just, you know?
And he'll never play anything other than Ron,
and he'll
probably
never have another role. Just kidding. Isn't he on, like, a TV show?
He's on a Netflix
show. He's on a Netflix show. Oh, Gabby watched, like, the pilot,
it's
right?
It's not that great.
Well, Rupert, we love you as
love
Ron.
You anyway.
We love you anyway. It's okay. But no, I'm in love with the trio. So.
I would second that.
Gabby, you are making a face. Seems like you have some thoughts about the trio.
There's something about the Weasleys. The way the Weasleys were described in the book and the way my expectation of that affects my expectation of the Weasleys in the movies. Even before I read the book, my expectation of Ron was to be more like his brothers, not in the sense of his character, obviously, because Ron's whole storyline is that he's not necessarily like his brothers, but I think more physically, and just the lines, like the book made an emphasis on him being almost as tall as Fred and George, you know, and I don't know if that would or wouldn't have made a difference between the way that the trio was perceived, right? Because then Ron would have been taller than, or looked less childlike than Ron and than Hermione and Harry. But I don't think Ron was given as much opportunity to show what, like, the importance of his role in, like, helping Harry navigate Hogwarts and helping Harry navigate the Wizarding World. So
you don't like Rupert Grint's casting?
Not necessarily.
Hmm.
Yeah. I think they like work around it later. Later, but initially, no.
Yeah. Yeah, I can see that. I tend to not be too bothered by like physical differences as long as it isn't like
the green eyes.
The green eyes. But the reason why I bring up the eye thing though is because that one bothers me mainly because that serves such a significant like purpose to like the entire series. Yeah. Like I always think about, this is going way ahead, but in Deathly Hallows when Snape is dying in the movie, he's like, you have your mother's eyes. And I'm like, no, he doesn't. Of course, I don't care. Like, I can suspend my disbelief. It's not that big of a deal. But, like, it's just that thing. But no, I can see that, though, Gabby. Yeah, I can see how that would hold someone back. Sienna, are you a fan of the trio?
Yeah, I think I'm more with you on this one just because, I don't know, I thought their child acting was cute. Like, it didn't make me cringe. It didn't turn me off of anything. I mean, yes, it wasn't like brilliant, and I actually do agree. I didn't think of it before, but I do think that Malfoy gives a good performance. Yeah. But I think they're kids, they're 11.
Tom Felton also had the most acting experience at that point, and he was the oldest.
Yeah,
so like,
I think they're realistically childish mm-hmm. in how they act, and
yeah.
I think they only grow into being better actors. I think they grow up well into their roles.
Mm-hmm.
We can talk about Hermione having this just, you know, no longer having her bushy hair, no longer having her buck teeth, whatever. But I think Ron hits puberty hard and fast, and therefore then he gets taller.
Hard and fast.
but yeah, I thought the casting was good, yeah. And I thought they aged well, because that's always the risk, is like, you sign on for 10 years, what happens if you can't act as a teenager, or you, I don't know, something weird physically happens, mm-hmm. or like you do an Amanda Bynes and go off the rail. Like, you know, they stayed very sort of in line. I don't know. Amanda Bynes is under a lot of pressure. I'm not going to bring that up. But, you know, whatever it was, they carried through the movies.
Yeah.
You know.
I think regardless of my dislikes with the casting of Ron, I really, it's weighed out by the fact that Daniel Radcliffe, Emma Watson, and Rupert Grint had really good chemistry, and that's what made like their on-screen performance be so what's the word? It pulled in so many people, and that's like why we keep watching and rewatching the movies.
Yeah.
Because their dynamic is
I guess they were, but Daniel Radcliffe and Rupert Grint being best friends as like kids, mm-hmm. like, you know, I can feel that chemistry. Even if the movie misses out on some of the moments that the book is into, I can still feel the chemistry when the movie does give it those moments.
I haven't watched enough off-screen like interviews or anything like that.
I've watched too many.
off-screen interactions to say that, but I feel like as people who work together to create and to like draw certain emotions and excitement or whatever out of people through like a film, they did a really good job of like telling a story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and also them being kids as well. Like apparently Daniel and Rupert would have like laughing fits, and they would just be like, all right, but you guys need to act now, so like calm down. and then let's get to the adults. I'm gonna say right off the bat, rest in peace Richard Harris, but I did not like that casting for Dumbledore.
Wow.
I thought that Richard Harris played it very frail old man wizard, like the kind of trope that you see in fantasy novels with like the beard and the old man with the voice. And I never read Dumbledore like that. Like, Dumbledore always read to me as like someone who looks very old but has the energy of like a 20-year-old. Like, he's over there like saying random words, like, I forgot that one phrase he always says, something to do with lemon. It's really silly. And like he there's even like scenes where he like moves around, like he has the movement, and I don't see, especially when I think about later in the series, like if Richard Harris had lived on, I don't see him performing some of those scenes the way we need
the
Dumbledore
in book six where they
have Blood Prince, but even like Order of the Phoenix, like Voldemort versus Dumbledore, like even like certain scenes in Goblet of Fire. Like, I just don't see that. Mm. And with the problems that I did have with Michael Gambon, I feel like Michael Gambon brought the energy that Richard Harris didn't have. And so I did not like that casting.
I agree with that. I didn't think about that point, and I agree with it. I just wish, and this might also be the fault of the people who wrote the script and all of that, but I just thought that Richard Harris had so much more, like, whimsy and playfulness, and, like, that was always such an essential part of Dumbledore, I felt, and I did not feel like the later Dumbledore retained any of the sort of comedic sense or, like, you know, warmness. I think he was more cold, and maybe that was strategic, but I just think it took a lot of the qualities of Dumbledore that I liked out of it. I do agree, though, I mean, sometimes he's, like, strategically cold, but also the physical, him being so dynamic, I think you're right, that definitely makes him more formidable than someone who's just unassuming and has got all the mental strength, but not really the physical ability to, like, battle in a real sense in a way that's intriguing to watch. But I don't know, I just thought, I thought for the first movie, Richard Harris did well as Dumbledore, because he doesn't need to be this, like, dynamic warrior in the first movie, because there's nothing, he's not called upon to fight in the first movie at all. Later he is, but
it's not even just the fights for me. It's just how, even, like, the voice, like, just how Dumbledore sounds and how he looks, just felt very, like, trope wizard to me, and I didn't like that.
To add on, I think old dude was gonna fall over, like, any minute. I thought he was gonna, like, twist his ankle, or, like, his leg was gonna snap in half.
Yeah.
And he was just, like, he just looked really old.
He just looked really, and yeah, granted,
he's Dumbledore, supposed to be, like, 112.
Yeah, but, like, granted, Dumbledore is old, but I think I feel like when they read Old Man Wizard, like, I just feel like they went straight for the trope of, like, any fantasy thing where, like, the really old, frail, wise, old grandpa wizard. And I'm just like,
he might as well have been carrying a cane.
He might as well have been carrying a cane. Literally, his wand should have just been a cane. Like, if they were... And, like, that's, I don't think that, like, I think Richard Harris gave a great performance for, like, the Dumbledore that they were trying to do for the movie.
That's what I was gonna say.
You know?
I feel like the aesthetic very much, like, works well with the aesthetic of the first movie. And I guess it kind of works for the second movie, but I definitely feel that for the movies following those, the aesthetic of the movie changes. I'm not sure because the plot and the theme of the movie changes, or the technical...
The director's change,
or just the technicalities in, like, how they're trying to portray the Wizarding World and how they're trying to portray Hogwarts is just feels different. Like,
I think largely because of the directors.
The first one and second one feel very old timey.
Yeah.
And then the third one feels very
Alfonso.
Very different.
My man.
But not to say that I don't enjoy the first, like, the visual images of the first and second one, I very much appreciate the old timiness because I feel like it's what drew me in. But old man Dumbledore wasn't working for me.
I need to talk about Christopher Columbus as a director in these films because I think going off
it's
of the point,
his name is Christopher Columbus,
isn't it? I think the point that that Gabby made in regards to, like, the way the film looks, I feel like Chris Columbus has such a, like, a heavy task of making this world come to life. And I think he did a really good job with that, as far as just, like, the way Chris Columbus has a very, like, standard director style. He's used to directing with kids. He did Home Alone and stuff like that. And I feel like his camera movement is always very stable and always just very, like, focused, and I think that works for the film's, like, betterment, because this is our first introduction to the world, and the world isn't as insane as we know it will end up being in the next books. Like, this world is supposed to be a point of, like, stability for Harry, like, the first thing in his life that is, like, stable. And so having that, like, that tone is very important. I think Chris Columbus did a really good job with that. I don't think that his eye for directing would have worked in the later films if he would have kept that same tone, which from other Chris Columbus movies I've seen, he would have. So I'm glad the movie changed up directors. But for this first film, then Chamber of Secrets, of course, as well, I think solid job. That is all that I had to say on the first Harry Potter movie. No peeves, boo!
Sad. Very sad.
And I think I'm going to end off that note. No peeves, boo! Thank you, everyone, so much for listening. Sienna, do you have anything you want to plug? Any socials?
Nope. Not at all.
Gabster?
Yeah, I didn't give any last time, so my Insta is gbyvrl mm-hmm. _. Follow me.
Lit. And then my name's Dejor, and my Twitter is at Dejor Evans. If you want film takes, follow me there. Thank you guys so much for listening, and we'll see you on the next episode of the Harry Potter Cast.